program. We're commemorating the 40th anniversary of the unveiling of the Big K. That was the Mighty 1090 Big Time Top 40 Radio, debuted in Little Rock 40 years ago on September the 3rd, 1962. And we've got the Emperor Doc Holliday with us. We've had Sonny Martin with us. Charlie King's here with us. Was a jock in the late 1960s. Pat Walsh, who is the station's general manager and probably negotiated with everybody between Little Rock and California for anything he could get. Clyde Clifford's going to be with us in a little while. We've been doing some air checks, jingles, old commercials, things like that. We talked a little bit ago about Jerry Sims. I want to thank whoever called in. I don't know who it was that called in, but said that Jerry Sims was Sonny Martin. So we did say a while ago there were only two Sonny Martins. There were three. There actually was a third Sonny Martin. So we want to get that out of the way. And Charlie has graciously reminded me that the original 1090 was in the Channel 11 building, which is down there at 8th and Izzard right now, across the street from the elegantly appointed Blue Goose nightclub. Charlie, tell us a story on it.
Well, I was before my time, actually.
All right, you're done.
I remember. That's it. It was, I just...
Well, you heard about... I mean, you
I listened to it on the... I listened to
it. Well, tell me what he did. It was Ken Knight, wasn't it?
Yes, and he talked about... he had the Ken Knight All-Night Club from midnight till 6 or whatever, with floor shows at 1 and 3, which were album comedy cuts. And he set the mood or whatever, and you could imagine this nightclub, the Ken Knight All-Night Club. And he said, it was all in purple, by the way. But that's another story. Anyway, and he had this sound effects in the background of glasses clinking and dinnerware and so. And you could just imagine fine dining and so forth and people having whatever they beverages they like and dancing. And he had this, he could look out across the street to the elegantly appointed Blue Goose nightclub, which, of course, was nothing in the world but a little hamburger.
You actually could look across the street. If you came to the door of the studio, you could look right out the stairwell, and right across 8th Street there was the Blue Goose.
Right.
My office was around the corner from there.
It only had two tables. That's important to understand.
The Blue Goose.
Only two tables, and they were usually filled with Channel 11 people, usually George Moore. But they would occupy the tables, and what was fascinating, Ken would go on and on about the limousines pulling up and the elegantly dressed people going in, and people from Wisconsin would actually try to make reservations when they were in Little Rock at the Blue Goose. And you can imagine these people, the Blue Goose was not run by the top echelon of cuisine or entertainment folk, would you say? And
it was a greasy spoon.
They would answer the phone and they would say, "You what? You want to make a reservation?"
But Pat said they had the coldest beer in town.
Well, and the barbecue was outstanding.
Yeah, and they created a disaster over there when they said that their monthly shipment of napkins disappeared and begged for America to mail them napkins so that they could have napkins for all of their guests at the Blue Goose.
Well, you know, you talk about the Blue Goose, and it got a lot of exposure up and down the Midwest there because of the nighttime pattern of 1090. But there's some other ones you mentioned in the record store. Stan's down in Shreveport. And what was the other one?
Floyd's Record Shop.
In
Ville Platte, Louisiana. Villeplatte.
Fantastic. Oh, my goodness.
At Stan's Record Shop at 728 Texas Street in Shreveport, Louisiana.
Who was the Chess record distributor in the state of Louisiana? He did distribute Chess records down there.
And he owned his own label, too.
He did. Oh, Paula, yeah. Paula. Yeah, he had the Uniques and people like that, sure. Yeah. Right. And we play them here on the air, too. All right. What else? Oh, the Commandos. Tell me about the 1090 Commandos.
Well, of course, this happened during the Emperor Holliday era, and we were always looking for things to do to involve people out in the state. I don't remember us playing that much in the metro area. Most of it was in the small towns. Havana, Arkansas, where they very quickly tell you the name of the town is Havana, and you better pronounce it that way.
As opposed to Havana.
You folks on KAAY have been saying Havana all week, and that's wrong. That was the very first word we got when we pulled into a drive-in looking for the gym.
Arkansas has some very strange pronunciations, though. They really do. I mean, I thought...
Nevada County, yeah.
Well, Nevada County. El Dorado is another one.
Washington.
Yeah, and McGeehee.
Cersei.
I mean, I fortunately, Cersei, yeah. And DeWitt, right. But I really thought when I came into the state that I'd make some mistakes, and fortunately I was coached very well by people. I think Charlie probably coached me on one of them. Charlie took me under his wing when in 1975 and kind of showed me the ropes about broadcasting. At least he thinks he did.
But the Commandos were a basketball team that were made up. Well, we originally wanted to make it up with the jocks, but the jocks were not jocks. The disc jockeys were not good jocks, and we had to bring in ringers. Pat Walsh, the transmitter people, Felix McDonald,
his brother,
Whitman. We just brought in anybody that ever walked through the door of KAAY that could play basketball.
Salespeople. Some of the
salespeople. Played. Secretaries.
Did a lot of the air staff actually want to participate in this?
Well, not all that strongly.
You know, that doesn't seem to have changed today, though. I mean, you know, when I was involved in On the Air and stuff, we could not get but a few people to turn out for events like that. Everybody else was the salespeople or the traffic people, the continuity people, you know, stuff like that.
Well, and of course, because of the time factor, your afternoon drive guy probably was not able to. The nighttime person
couldn't. He couldn't.
The midnight to morning person couldn't. So you had
he was at the
people.
Blue Goose.
Yeah, you had a lot of people who could not.
Well, we would drive to Dumas or McGee or wherever, Clinton, yeah, and play a local team.
Right. Well, it was a fundraiser for the for the local communities and stuff like
we
that.
We would play all sorts of different things. Faculty, anybody that wanted to play basketball that wanted an appearance. We were for
Charlie them. Still has his shirt, I understand.
The jersey, yeah.
You can get into it still?
No.
Okay.
And, of course, we were a poor man's Harlem Globetrotters. Right. We tried to come up with some sticks and things. But
we stole all of their material, or at least all that we were physically able to do. I can remember Ron Owens would grab the ball.
Now, which Ron Owens are we talking about?
Walt Sadler.
Okay.
And one of his sticks, so to speak, was when we got the ball after the other team had scored, and they usually did well because they had ringers, too. They would run the assistant coaches in on us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Ron would get the ball and would go flying down the court, screaming at the top of his lungs and dribbling all the way and go right off the court, right out the door and right outside with the ball. Just kept going, just screaming and hollering the whole way. And people thought that was funny, I guess.
Well, it was if you had to be there.
fascinating, too, we charged a nominal fee for expenses. The players had expenses they had to meet, and we had some schools at times didn't want their team members to play, the actual team members, because that would, of course, destroy their amateur status. But we tried to convince them this was strictly expense money and certainly couldn't be construed to be any type of professional sports.
AJ, a while ago, Doc Holliday, get these names out here. You know he didn't go through life named Doc Holliday. Anyway, but you had asked me a while ago about a jingle from Pam's, the Pam service in Dallas that did them. And during the Sonovox series is when I played one a while ago with that distorted sound on the voice. And you asked me if there was one where the man repeatedly or the voice kept repeating over and over again, Big K, Big K. I found it for you, dug it out. This is from probably 64, 65, and a jingle you more than likely have heard.
K-A-A-Y, June 10, 90. Big gay, big gay, big gay, big gay.